Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm your host Chris Beasley, joined by my colleague, the Everton's the Echo's Everton correspondent, Joe Thomas, and our regular guest, official club statistician Gavin Buckland. We've been away this week since Gavin and I last spoke to you in the immediate aftermath of the points deduction on Monday. I was off yesterday while Joe was at Finch Farm, but he was at Goodison Park for the press conference. We'll come on to all that. I went to York with one of my children, and we went to the Jorvik Centre and learning about life and what it was like over 1,000 years ago. And I thought about this a few times. Any modern person sort of transferred into that age of history wouldn't last for 5 minutes just going back to the Viking age. And I think there's possibly something similar there with fans of Everton's neighbours there. I mean, because after what was a poor result for them last night, I mean, obviously we've had the post-mortem in the Echo office this morning, and some people saying, a colleague of mine said, their mother went to the game because going to the Premier League matches is too much for her. They're strange. She could only go to the European ones. So it just baffled me, really, because another week of this off-the-pitch turmoil at Goodison Park. Now there's a club just on the other side of the park, and their supporters seem rather more delicate on many of these issues. But that's enough of my day off. Back into the day-to-day business of that, Joe, because it's the first time you've been with us since that announcement. Just obviously your thoughts on all the latest chaos, shall we call it.
Firstly, I had absolutely no idea where that was going.
Yes.
Yeah. Rather than a loud there, Chris, where this was going.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I've read through the documents. I listened to your podcast earlier on the week, and I subscribe probably to the same view that you expressed, and the day where I was actually, I'd take 2 points. Look, I mean, I think there are a lot of problems with the PSR regulations. I think there are a lot of issues with the fact that they're getting punished twice in the same season for, breaches that stem to regulatory periods. I think there are problems with the inconsistency that's running through some of the judgments. And I think that one of the biggest problems is the fact that we have profit and sustainability regulations, which offer no route seemingly to sustainability for clubs that fall foul of them. And rehabilitation surely has to be, or the opportunity to rehabilitate surely has to be part of the punishment process. Yeah. And clearly that isn't the case. Everton have written that this week about how, unfortunately the club seems trapped in a bit of a doom spiral at the moment where it just can't escape the problems it's got either on the pitch or off the pitch, and seemingly there's no way out. And I think that the Premier League is to some extent trapping. I think my hope was that this case, the second case, would be a full stop on everything.
Yeah.
I hope that, I expected a points deduction and I expected it to be quite damning. I think it was quite damning of the club and the way the club's been run. But I was hopeful that it would resolve most of the outstanding issues. It would give some clarity going forward for the rest of the season, and it would give some clarity going forward, almost as if the club, from a PSR perspective, could begin to start afresh again from where we are now. And instead, that hasn't been the case because of two reasons. One, because the Premier League's deferred the arguments over the interest on stadium expenses, on the loans for stadium expenses. And I think that there's an inherent contradiction in the idea that the Premier League is saying, we need to protect the integrity of the competition so much that we're going to punish Everton twice in the same season for two seasons worth of breaches, but then saying, oh, actually, this argument, we haven't got time to have that, we'll have it at a later date. That is a contradiction. And it's one that's problematic for Everton, because if Everton lose that argument, they will probably start. And my understanding is, if they were to get a points deduction from that case, it would be for next season, it wouldn't be retrospectively applied. So there's a very real possibility that Everton start next season, or it might not even be done by the start of next season. There hasn't been a date set for this. It's not definitely going to be in the summer. It probably is going to be, but not definitely yet. So Everton start next season under a cloud with that respect. And then the other troubling part was the numbers that we saw again. And we knew the direction things were heading in when we saw Everton's accounts published on Easter Sunday, 6 p.m. tells you everything the timing does. But now we've seen it in black and white, the fact that have how little wriggle room Everton have in this year's PSR, and that led to my piece saying that they are probably, not definitely, but probably going to have to sell a player in the first few weeks of the transfer window, which opens on June the 14th, in order to find a way to not breach for a third consecutive year. And therefore, I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, there are three big milestones on the horizon. There's the appeal. Hopefully, Everton have some success in that. Whether they will or not, I'm not sure. I think there are arguments to say that they could have got more, bearing in mind what we've seen already. I think there are also arguments to say that, as I've just said, harsher they're being punished twice in the same season. We've got the stadium interest here in at some point after the season, and then we've got that deadline on June the 30th, and it just traps Everton in this cycle of problems, and it means that there is no clear way out in the short term. And a summer that I think we were all hoping to spend building towards one last season at Goodison Park and make the most of that is going to be under another cloud of uncertainty and instability. But for all that, just on the points in general, I was, bearing in mind everything we've seen so far, I thought this from reading through the case, that there was a very realistic possibility Everton would end up getting more. Whether I think that's fair or not is a different matter, but from what we've seen, I thought it could have been higher, and I'm grateful that it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, Gav, you and I more or less did it straight away within a couple of hours or so. Didn't it? I mean, 4 days on, with time to digest the information. I mean, any more thoughts about where you moved on from where we were on Monday?
No, same as Monday. Yeah. I thought we did it 90 minutes after the announcement. On Monday we did it, and I thought my initial reaction is what Joe's is now. I thought that's a result. 2 points in the great scheme of things. I think I'm surprised the Premier League didn't go in harder, bearing in mind their previous, submissions around, warning Everton about spending, and you've now breached in the second consecutive year, or third consecutive year, probably. As we all know, we've sort of let off in 2021. And they didn't really, they didn't submit any aggravating factors. It may be there that they're trying to look after their own reputation in the Premier League, aren't they? I think all the aggravating factors they put in across the Forest and Everton cases, both cases, have largely, 90% of them being, knocked back. So they're probably looking after their own reputation. But I thought 2 points was a result. I thought we were dealt with quite leniently over the double jeopardy thing. Mm-hmm. Bear in mind, we breached again. My main concern now is, and this goes back to this point, is what Joe said, is the next hearing. We get talk about fans in football getting treated with contempt. They've known for 2 weeks that there's going to be another hearing, don't they? And there's been nothing from the Premier League over dates when, not an official for the Premier League, when's it going to happen? And no indications or not. And I think that's, because it was said next season. It's not explicit, is it, in the commission for hearing? It's just expectation is. And I think that's poor. I think that's really poor treatment of fans. We want to know where the clubs stand.
Yeah.
And other clubs.
And again,
all the clubs around Everton as well. I think that's really poor, because they've known for 2 weeks. This should be right near the top of their list to do, the Premier League. And I think it's a dereliction of duty not to treat this as urgent and get it resolved, so everybody knows when it's happening, and dates and so on and so forth. And bear in mind Joe's point about 23, 24, and the numbers aren't looking good. And hopefully we can sell. We may have to sell a player, and hopefully if we do, we can live with them. PSR. There could be this. In fact, next season, having been the first club to have two deductions in one season, next season could be another two deductions, couldn't it?
Yeah.
We're looking at that again, and that's not great. And that's the other thing that came out. The commissioners, our numbers are not great. And obviously we've seen stuff this week about ownership and stuff, which is a separate thing, is we've got to really be on the ball in terms of looking at our finances, how they're going to work between now and the end of June, and acting accordingly. But within that, the interest issue doesn't help us there, because we don't know where we stand.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, really. In terms of dates, we need to know that the interest issue will be sorted before the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we need to know what we're working to for PSR for 2023-24. It can't be sorted after the end of the June, where we've acted in, will we get it or not? Mm. And we're found guilty of it, because we didn't know what parameters we're operating to financially. So the whole thing needs to be sorted before, as you said, Joe, before the transfer window.
Yeah.
Starts in the middle of June, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the Premier League not given any dates or timetable, but only for some for 2 months, I think that's really poor.
Yeah.
For everybody concerned.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
One thing, Joe, from your doom cycle piece, which I think, you know, as much as people, we don't like reading about this stuff, I think there's been a lot of good feedback from that. Mm. People have appreciated the piece and the way you spell that out. With that was certainly from Everton's point of view. This line, though, in terms of what the prep, because the Premier League, as we know now, have attempted, at least they suggested that Everton should lose 17 points in total this season. This issue in terms of looking at the position in hindsight, the whole thing with the Russian connections with Mr. Usmanov and USM, the sponsorship. This was, I'd done a piece on it as well. Some sort of quite dangerous language, really, in terms of what the Premier League are saying about in terms of the connections to Russia, looking back to 2014, and almost like the heightened risk. I mean, did that strike a chord with you? That sort of looking at things, sort of reflection.
It did. I mean, hindsight is a wonderful thing. Yeah. I think there are elements of the Premier League case that they hold Everton to a standard that I think is unreasonable.
Mm.
Lots of the Premier League point to Everton. Evans' dealings with Alisher Usmanov and the affiliated companies in the wake of the 2014 Russian invasion of Crimea and then the Salisbury poisonings in 2018, and say basically, Everton should have been aware that there were risks of associated with these as a result of that geopolitical system. I think there's a fundamental point with the Premier League that I do have some sympathy with, and that is basically what the Premier League are actually saying is, you can see that there might be something going on here. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. What they're saying is, don't commit to be... It's a bit naive if you are essentially placing your compliance with the regulatory system almost solely on commercial deals with Russian entities, bearing in mind what's going on there. But I think that probably asks... Bearing in mind none of these companies were sanctioned at the time, bearing in mind the Premier League was still doing business and with Russia, and the Premier League took a proactive decision, which I think we all agree with was the right thing to do, to suspend its activity, its deals with those Russian companies. And it acted to do so in advance of the Premier League taking the same decision over its own deals with Russian companies, which it had in the time. So I think that, they're asking a lot of Everton. I think when you look at the money that is in the Premier League, some of the business ties, some of the commercial deals, not just with the Premier League, but also with so many of its clubs, to say that Everton should have avoided certain deals or sought alternative options, bearing in mind what was going on at the time when nobody else was doing that, I think is poor. And I think that hindsight thing is the lack of foresight from Everton that they're accusing Everton of having is problematic throughout, because I think, again, there has to be an acceptance that the time frames of these prosecutions mean that if Everton had effectively already committed their second offence before their first case was judged.
Yeah.
Obviously the second case, then the financial year ended on June the 30th of 23, and then it was after that they had the case held over the first one, which is where we've done a lot of learning. A lot of precedents were set in that November, in that October hearing, and November judgment. So I think from Everton, where I probably give Everton a degree of sympathy, a degree of credit for is it's not like it'd be very easy to someone to say Everton have failed to learn from their mistakes here by committing the second breach. Really, it's one continuous breach because going into that second year, there was so much in the dark about the arguments that would underpin their first one. There was a lot up in the air. There were a lot of grey areas that hadn't been resolved. Yeah. So, you know, again, it's that inability to give Everton some justified credit, I think, for not being able to predict the future.
Yeah.
And I think that, and again, this is part of my piece, one of the things I find really troubling, like genuinely troubling in the second case, is just the tone of the Premier League prosecution. You know, it gets into some really petty squabbles. Like, you get to the point where you're arguing over board members bringing laptops to to hearings, semantics over press releases. There's an argument in this hearing about the extent to which Everton suggested they would cooperate with the second investigation by the wording of their press release. And it's just all becomes very, very petty and very just unnecessary. Yeah. I don't think the Premier League needs to stoop to that level when the headline figures already support the outlines of their arguments. Everton have been poorly managed.
Yeah.
There is a case there on paper, which means that they can throw the book at Everton, unfortunately. Obviously, they've done that. And I think that you have to kind of view that tone as probably part of the wider context in which the Premier League's operating. Is it any coincidence on the same day that this second judgment comes out against Everton, you've got the Premier League advertising against independent regulation in the, on the political website Politico, a message there direct at the heart of Parliament. It's a publication they all read. Next day, you've got Richard Masters, the CEO, doing a big piece in the Times. I don't think it's unfair to suggest that this week has been part of an orchestrated plot by PR plot by the Premier League to have one last go, one last fight to, limiting the powers of the independent regulator that we know is coming. And I don't think you can view the Everton verdict, the timing of it, and the tone of that attempted prosecution by the Premier League in isolation of those wider things.
Yeah, Gav, I mean, we discussed that paragraph 256, where a lot of mud has been flung at Blues by the Premier League. But the Commission say, in our view, many, if not most, of the criticisms levelled against the club in this respect by the Premier League are unwarranted, overstated, or both. Strong stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that was in relation to the bits Joe was talking about meetings and the general attitude of the Premier League to Everton regarding, guilty playing and all that type of stuff. But there's no change in the Premier League's behaviour with regard to that single issue than the whole case, you would say. That appears to be a thread and going through a lot of things. That's why, you could prove that by saying a lot of the aggravating factors were thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
Weren't it by the previous commission first time at Everton, and the appeal with Everton as well. So those only relating to a specific thing in this commission.
And that's important, I think that, just sorry to jump in, but I think a lot of the things that we see in response to some of the articles that we put in our podcast is, and I think just within the general kind of world on social medias, we see a lot of paragraphs pulled out and taken out of context. And it's important to note that paragraph relates specifically to the argument over cooperation between Everton and the Premier League. It doesn't relate to the wider Premier League case against Everton. And I think that people probably, I can understand why people don't read these judgments, but these judgments are often dozens of pages long with hundreds of paragraphs. And the danger of pulling one paragraph out of isolation is so very often the way these things work is they refer directly to other paragraphs.
Right.
And you need to read them all together to understand what they're being said.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm saying. But what I'm also saying, Joe, is that sort of self-contained issue is part of a continual flow of, part of the continual flow of the relationship between Everton and the Premier League on this, on the case that have been petty. I started this podcast talking about 2 weeks down the line, we still don't know how we're going to be treated over this second, over this second hearing, over the incest 2 weeks down the line. Well, I think that the Premier League, that's cheating one of its shareholders, one of its members, with a certain amount of contempt, isn't it? If not saying you don't know a date yet, at least give an update in that time for they may be telling the club off the record. I get that, but do some public announcement for fans just so that's being looked at and that we consent that would be treated in a fair manner, i.e. it would all be sorted before the June transfer window, not afterwards. And I think, I do get what you're saying, Joe, and I say that, but there has been some bits, hasn't it, through this where, you, as I say, the amount of the aggravating factors they've put forward that have been rejected and stuff, that supporters reading previous commissions will say, well, actually, that paragraph 256 could apply to previous, you know, to previous relationships between the two clubs. Mentioned before, taking 9 months to get back to us over our submission in March 22 over like things like interest and the Ukraine stuff, taking 9 months to get back to us, and then do that by telephone call. You know, it's not a stretch of imagination to say that if it had been another club, and I'm talking, you know, dare I say, one of the big six, would they have been treated differently? Possibly. Would they have taken 9 months to get back to them over an important issue? It's an interesting point.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
A big part of this, Joe, and obviously you and Gav have done a great job here, sort of digging, getting the facts behind it, because, you know, like I say, such a complicated document and dry, obviously, for people to sort of, you know, they're thinking about football and then having to do all the politics with all that comes with this. But it's been the Premier League's handling of it, and again, we've seen in the aftermath of this, Kevin Ratcliffe, you did the piece on him, Everton's most successful captain, who we had in speaking to us recently on our Goodison Park My Home series. But he signed the petition to try and remove Richard Masters from his position. There seems to be just, both with Everton and generally, a dissatisfaction with the whole way that this whole issue, Everton and other clubs, has been handled this season.
Yeah, well, I think that largely the rules probably aren't fit for purpose, really. I don't think... You know, the Premier League seemed to accuse Everton of an awful lack of foresight, and I think that you can make the same argument about the Premier League here and probably haven't looked forward to how their rules are going to be applied. I think really there should be things like backstop dates that, you know, mean that these things are dealt with before the end of the season. We know that Everton's appeal might not lead to a resolution before the end of the season, which is obviously absolutely ridiculous. I think the way in which so many of these things play out and the timings of them is problematic, and the way in which the kind of rules, perhaps unintentionally, essentially trap clubs in. Yeah. Like Gav says there, you know, the way in which the Premier League has behaved and the timeframes in which it's adopted for so many of these things have, you know, where Everton would have learnt from, you know, the mistakes that they were later accused of and punished for, we don't know, we can't say.
Yeah.
But they weren't given the opportunity, and that's problematic. A lot of the second breach stems from their first breach, and you know, as I say, those offences were essentially already committed before they knew half of the stuff that would come out in the first one. So I think that a lot of people have a lot of issues with the Premier League and its handling of the English game, the English pyramid, and I think most of those are justified. It's clearly that the Premier League's border trying to cling on to as much power as it possibly can do in the threat of independent regulation, and I think sadly Everton have become a pawn in that battle. And whilst the club might have allowed themselves to fall into a position where they could, you know, essentially become the guinea pig for a lot of this stuff, the test case for a lot of this stuff, you know, I do think that I do have some sympathy for the club and the way it's been treated by a lot of these processes, which don't really seem to have been thought through properly. Because, like, you know, like I started off with this, one of the things that, and it was the main thrust of one of my pieces this week, is just saying, if a club does fall foul of these, how does it get out? There has to be some desire from the Premier League to give clubs the operating room to get themselves onto a sustainable keel. And, you know, there isn't that room for Everton, because every time it feels like they're just about to get up off their, you know, off their knees, they're kicked back down again. And there's no better example of that than this season, where you think that, you know, look at Everton. The last two seasons have been a bit appalling. Relegation fights have gone right down to the final whistle. You know, the fans haven't deserved to put up with that, and the fans have largely dragged those players through, you know, the final hurdles, the obstacles to keep them in the Premier League. And some of the best ways for a club which is struggling financially like Everton, has to find a more sustainable pathway is by climbing up the Premier League and by being able to properly plan for transfer windows. And if you look at this season, well, if you add those 8 points onto the tally, I know lots of people have different opinions on Sean Dyche and the style of football, and, you know, nobody wants them to be in a situation where they have to take this essentially what is essentially medicine at the minute. But on the pitch, if you look at it in those core terms, significant progress has been made.
Yeah.
And really, if you add those 8 points on, well, it probably would by the end of the season would lead to, you know, £9-10 million worth of extra merit payments because they finish higher up the league.
Yeah.
If they haven't got those 8 points, then you're looking at a situation where they didn't win a game for 4 months, and they've had 8 points taken off them, and they're still not in the relegation zone. You know, really, this season, this summer, Everton are not going to have a lot of money to spend, even if the wealthiest owners in the world came and took over Everton. Because of the way the PSR stuff works, they need to sort out a lot of their commercial stuff to be able to say, we've got this money coming in to justify increased expenditure going out. So they're not going to have an expensive summer, certainly not unless they sell a lot of players and get a lot of money for them. But what they do have this summer is, with some of the wages that are likely to fall off the wage bill for contract expiry, they are likely to have a good opportunity to reshape that squad. And if Kevin Falwell sat there in February thinking, I am 90% sure that they're going to be a Premier League club, and he's got a 4 or 5 month run-up to the January, to the summer transfer window, he can look at the free players, he can have conversations with agents for free players, he can plan things on the basis that Everton are going to be a Premier League club, and that he can then use that as the foundation for those deals, and he can maybe then look to exploit the opportunities that transfer window could hold, even for somebody with a very low budget. He hasn't been able to do that. He's not going to be able to do that because, once again, because of the deductions, Everton find themselves in a situation where they're going to fight in a fight for the death to survival. And, you know, right now, Kevin Falwell is probably going to have to, you know, he's probably drawing up Plan A Premier League, and for a third season in a row, contingency plan, championship, split the time, split the attention on that, lose out on some of the better prospects in the free market as a result of that, be delayed in some of the conversations over who the transfer targets are going to be as a result of that, and also, because everybody knows the financial status applied the club's in, probably going to have to look to fund all that whilst not only selling one of his better players, but probably knowing he's going to have to compromise on the fee and sell below market rate because Everton, because Everton's rivals will know the club needs to sell before a certain date.
Yeah. I mean, Gaff, you and I spoke before we came on air, and we just, like, seems no way out of this, unfortunately. And part of that is, like, as Joe's just said, that the parameters that the Premier League have brought in terms of, well, not brought, in terms of it's a cycle that it seems difficult to escape from.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy in the end, isn't it, really? I think the problem, the wider problem of the Premier League, we've seen the stuff around Masters this week, and I can see the emotional reaction, but it doesn't, that type of stuff, I'm not sure means a lot, in that it was put to me this week, we were talking about this, you know, the Premier League with somebody, and they made the point that, and I know this for a fact, you know, football administration used to be people who were football people, you know, inverted commas, who come through the county FA system, the roads that lines the Football League and the Football Association. Their experience was in the game, that they understood the game and stuff. Now the Premier League's run by accountants and solicitors, isn't it? Really, with no direct feel or experience of the game in the wider sense. And I think that's reflected in their behaviour, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Their behaviour towards fans, particularly, and also we've seen this stuff over the grassroots.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to bear in mind when some of, you know, whoever's had the Premier League, it's the culture and what the Premier League exists for now, isn't it? Which is completely different to what it was intended to exist, by the way, 30 odd years ago when it was founded. So I think that's one of the issues. But I do think within all this, what we're talking about, you can't disassociate the profit and sustainability with the ownership issue too. They're becoming closer and closer every day, and that's been shown this week, hasn't it, really? Where one of the things that's come up is, and goes back to your point about we don't know where we stand, Joe, is 777 is one of the things is, well, we don't know if the club's future with Premier League or not, where they sit, really having sit within that hierarchy. That's just delaying stuff, isn't it? I think that's one of the arguments that's been put forward, because if you know you're going to be Premier League, easy to get investors, isn't it? If you don't know, it isn't. And the matters are coming to a head to me at the moment, because the PSR stuff and the ownership stuff, which should be in parallel, actually now in the merging together, aren't into one big question for Everton, and that's the concern I've got.
Yeah.
But I do totally agree with what Joe was saying there, is, and the piece was really good, is, you know, they're talking about looking at the regulations again, and now they've got some sort of tacit agreement to change them. Within that, there has to be some sort of backstop, as you say, where after this, we can't carry on to see the club infinitely like this. At some point, we've got to draw a halt and give them a chance to breathe within the regulations. And because it goes back to what we always say, the Premier never thought that people would breach. And there's a lot of unintended consequences, isn't it? And that law in this case is once you breach, it's very, very difficult not to breach.
Yeah.
In future years.
Yeah.
Or if you don't breach, you're going to the Championship and beyond. And that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And Joe, as Gav just mentioned there, the ownership issue there. I've just got a piece by Dave Powell, our football finance guy there, is obviously talking about the request that 777 have made to delay formally request an extension on the deadline there, and are just able to shed any light where how do you think we're at with all this particular sort of state of play at the moment, because it's just rumbling on and on, isn't it? And the problem is it's going to get to a point where it goes beyond a certain time. It's not going to happen if these firm things aren't met, these requirements aren't met.
No, I mean, the only thing that's clear at the minute is the lack of clarity. The fact that the only thing that we know is that we don't know anything really, isn't it, about what's going to unfold. I think, it's troubling, isn't it? Let's be honest. I mean, we're 7 months into this and 777 haven't been able to come up with the answers so far. For all of our criticism to the Premier League in relation to PSR thing, I think we all agree that it's right that they do a thorough job on Everton's ownership issue. I'm not skilled enough in terms of accounts to know whether or not the conditions they put in place are right and fair. I don't know, but obviously it is essential. Everton's is taken over by people that actually have the means to be able to do so. And that's before you even get into the wider picture of 777 and the controversy which surrounds them and their interests and their exploits that we've long discussed on here as well. Look, I mean, at the minute it seems to be in MSP's hands, really. I mean, do they allow the extension or not? If they do, then it's another stay. It's another month of probably you would anticipate that. I mean, 777 has. Funding packages tend to run month to month, so I think they sign off their last one at the end of March. So if they get a stay and more time from MSP, you would assume that they would then fund the club through April into the end of April, so through May. But they're not going to do that indefinitely, and it's clear that they're having a lot of trouble trying to raise the money that they need to kind of fulfill this obligation. But on the same hand, it's not so simple as MSP think, going, rubbing their hands with glee, saying this isn't fulfilled, we'll take a 50+1 percent stake in the club, because I think, and this is a problem for anybody taking over Everton right now, it's a club that has significant financial obligations and is losing a lot of money. So there isn't it isn't a freebie here. This isn't Everton. Isn't a gift. It comes with a huge amount of financial burden for anybody that wants to try and turn it around. So, we know previously there was a desire from MSP to take a stake in the club and potentially build that up into one where they owned it. That was the deal that was on the table. This time last year, roughly, and ended up falling through for whatever reason. Whether that desire still exists, I don't know at the moment. Obviously, Everton are. A lot has changed in that year, including the £200 million odds that they would owe to 777. If 777 weren't to be able to take over, they'd still be owed that money. And obviously, the PSR situation is something that's significantly changed the last 12 months, because you have Everton struggling to stay in the Premier League this season. And it looks like that might be a struggle next season as well, which might reduce the what's left of the attractiveness of Everton to another bidder. But really what we do need is a resolution on this as soon as possible, so that Everton can start laying the foundation to build for a better future. That doesn't look like it's coming anytime soon. Gav, I mean, you'd probably be better placed to give your thoughts on this, but where do you see Everton right now in relation to this ownership thing?
Yeah.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
can't say much more than that. All you know is that whoever's going to come in needs to have a lot of money, don't they? £400 million. Yeah, £400 million for the stadium, pay Moshiri off, pay off MSP or whatever. It's a, you know, give money for the, to, you know, keep on, give money to the club to keep it going for the next couple of months. So you need to have a bit of cash. The concern I've got is around 777 is people say, don't they, if 77 don't come in, there's other people want to buy, who want to buy the club, and people take, you know, comfort from that, perhaps understandably, given, you know, 777 and some of the stories. But from that, they've got to go to the same owners and directors, test the 777. That could take several months, couldn't it?
Yeah.
So what if it's not going to be a case, 777 doesn't happen on the Friday, it's not going to go forward, that somebody comes in on the Monday, takes over the ownership of the club. Somebody, that might be, there could be a 3 or 4 month vacuum then, where we just go through Groundhog Day, where we go through the 777.
And they're all money as well.
And so it's even worse in that respect. Yeah. So the question for me is, who funds the club in that time? Mm. And this goes back to what I was saying before about the PSR and the ownership are now merged in that, Joe, you say, so we have to sell, I'm just hypothesising it, so we have to sell Brandwaite in June. But we'd have to do that both for the, because no owner to keep the club of folks and to live within PSR. So we're selling one player for two completely different reasons. And that's where I think now the two things are now inextricably linked. And the concern I've got is, if it doesn't go through with 777, what's going to happen in the media 3 months after that? Who's going to fund the club? Bear in mind, we have the stadium, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's when I think things get tricky
Probably one thing that is worth bearing in mind, I think, is what we're heading towards a transfer window in the summer, aren't we?
Yeah.
Is that, like you mentioned there, with Brandwaite or anybody else, it's by no means a happy scenario, but obviously once the transfer window opens, it's one of the few opportunities that the club has to generate significant amounts of money itself, isn't it? And it might just be money to keep the lights on, but there are external sources of income there that are open to the club in the very short term, if it can get to that point, and then obviously find people that are willing to do deals with it as well.
And you can do deals with your creditors as well. You know, the people that own us can, you know, defer, you know, have a break without paying for however long. So it's not the end of the world as such. It just makes a complicated matter.
Yeah.
You know, if it's puzzle, even more complicated for me. But it's that window, if it doesn't go through a 777, that concerns me the 3 months after that.
Yeah. Well, let's attempt to move on to
a bit of football.
You would add, Joe, and like I said, at Goodison Park rather than Finch Farm, so not as far for you to drive that particular day. But just interesting, the piece you had this morning from the embargo section, you sort of alluded to it already there with Sean Dyche and how he's being measured. I'll quote directly from him then. We should be on 35 points. I'd be getting measured differently, myself and the team and the players and the club, in spite of having a tough run. It's interesting what he says, but I mean, a lot of people said, you know, whatever you think of Sean Dyche and his style, he probably does have a good point in that respect.
Yeah, I said earlier on this, I think that, you know, if you were to look at the headline figures on the pitch, you can't help but see this is a season of progress. You know, have we enjoyed it? No. Has it been particularly good or good to watch? Not necessarily, no. Has it included a record-breaking Premier League winless run that lasted for 4 months? Yes, you know, that's all horrible. But when you think that this is a side that for two consecutive seasons has taken its relegation fight to the last week of the campaign, and then you throw in the fact that because of the cuts to the squad for the reason we've already discussed, this is probably the weakest squad of those three seasons,
because they have to keep selling.
And then you look at and then you look at what they've achieved on the pitch. Yeah. Like I say, you know, 35 points without the deductions, it'd be 10 points clear with a handful of games left. And really, they'd have got the bulk of the points needed to stay up before Christmas because it went. It's a funny way, it's a daft way of looking at it, and maybe it just shows where we're at in terms of how desperate we need to be to try and find positives. Or how low the threshold is for a positive. But the club has gone on its longest ever winless run in the Premier League history, and yet should still be better off than considerably better off than where it would be at this stage in any of the two previous seasons, and that is progress. Mm. We can talk about whether it's a weaker league or whatever. Talk about the style of football, talk about the manner of football, talk about the manager, we can talk about all those things, but there's no escape in that. You know, Everton shouldn't be... Everton's have delivered the performances and the results to mean that they shouldn't be in a relegation battle right now, and that is a significantly better situation than either of the past two seasons. I think that if they don't have the points deductions, I think that... If they didn't have the points deductions, I think that there would be a little bit more positivity towards Sean Dyche. I think he's right that it would reframe to some extent the discussion around the role that he's done, but I also think he has to be careful in the sense that I don't think that any manager can go 13 games in a league season consecutively 4 months without a win and expect not to face severe criticism and scrutiny over the job that they're doing. And we've seen, you know, clubs including Everton, when they've been in far healthier positions, have changed managers for far less severe runs than that. So, you know, I think that when you look at everything in the rounds, I think it's possible to make an argument Sean Dyche is doing a good job. I think he has delivered progress in very, very trying circumstances. I do think that those trying circumstances also offer him a degree of protection, which it might be, you know, do well for him to recognise slightly. The fact that there hasn't really been anybody in control at the top of the club to make a decision, the fact that, you know, should people be that way inclined, the fact there's no real money at the club to pay off another, you know, series of coaches for ending their contracts early is also another factor. And also, you know, that wider context does give him a degree of protection, because the first point, and it's right that this is the first point when we come to judging him, but the first point is going, well, look at everything he's had to deal with.
Gav, it's two sort of issues here, isn't it? Like, the overall picture, like we've said there, who would have realistically done better in those circumstances, but almost in danger going back to FFP here, but a trend, because it has been, until obviously Burnley stopped the rot, which it had to do, that downward spiral after Christmas.
Yeah, I get that, but I think it's going to be one of these seasons where, and I basically said this, you're going to have to just look at it in the round, aren't you? Mm. So if we stay, I think it's going to be one of them campaigns, if we stay up, you know, for all the 8-point deductions and all that type of stuff, if we stay up, I think a few years down the line, we'll look at that season with all the stuff going on off the pitch with the benefits of hindsight and go, well, yeah, like you did well.
Well, yeah.
Staying up there, you inherited the team that was, you know, in the bottom three. I'd had the relegation fight the year before. You've had all the stuff, you don't need to list. You've had 8 points taken off you for the moment, and you stayed up.
That's it.
You know, I think, and again, at the moment, Sticky's getting, and I think you can't, and I get that, there is within that, I think, the whole, you know, criticism of the whole club around Everton, the ownership, and I get that, and the finances, I get all that, and Dyche is part of that, isn't it? But I think in the cold light today, several years down the line, I think, you know, may not be Everton fans, but I certainly will be thinking, tell you what, he did a great job keeping us up there. With the squad that is best described as threadbare, I was an 8-point deduction, and you know all that other stuff off the pitch, all the noise likes to say, and he kept Everton up, and as you say, in a conceivably better place, if not for the points deductions, than what you were the previous couple of campaigns. I think people say, yeah, did a good job there, but I do get the stick going now to the moment, because obviously there's 13 games, but. I think in a few years' time, we may look at things slightly differently. Well, that's it.
Like, I mean, yesterday he's talking about the right. He wants this to be the platform for the rise of the Toffees, and you know, giving them a foundation for which they can build on. You know, make progress, long term progress, going into the new stadium and into the future. And yeah, this may not be the beginning of the recovery. Mm-hmm. We may still be some way away from that, but there's no doubt that in order for the recovery to have to be the best chance of a recovery, of a rehabilitation, of a revival, Everton need to remain in the Premier League to give them the footing to grow from. And he did it last season. Sean Dyche, he came in and kept the club up. And, you know, he is probably the best person to keep the club up this season. I think Everton would be weaker if they were to make any decisions over his role certainly now. And I think he deserves credit for the real points tally that he's got in the circumstances that he has.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, there's every chance that we will, as Gav says, look back on this and say, if a brighter future is to come, it wouldn't have been possible without the, you know, albeit pragmatism that we wish we didn't have to kind of deal with. But it might be because of this period now, and that's probably the best thing that we can hope for.
There's a little bit there of Walter Smith thing, I think, in the early 2000s, where the Walter got a load of stick, where they put in retrospect, considering what was going on around the club.
Yeah.
He did a decent job in very trying circumstances on occasions. And I think hopefully we'll look back on this when we're podding in 3 or 4 years' time, and I've been saying, you know, we did a good job there, but we've just got to wait and see, and he's still got to keep us up.
Yeah.
You know,
what's the general mood like at Goodison, Joe, for that one out? What sort of form did you find with the gaffer in?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, yeah, he can be combative at the best of times. And I think he deserves to be. You know, he's someone that takes a lot of stick. I think he has every right to defend himself. I don't think he always answers questions as well as he could do. But there are a number of issues at the moment, and whilst there's significant talking points, I don't quite know what people expect him to say on them. You know, he isn't responsible for the vast majority of issues that this club faces. But he has to deal very much with the real on the pitch consequences of them. And it's not going to serve him well to come out and start railing against either the Premier League or against the former ownership of the club or former influential people at the club. Yeah. Really, as boring and as it might be, and as stubborn as it might be to hear him keep saying, he has just got to focus on delivering results on the pitch. Now, obviously, Everton didn't do that for a significant amount of time, but they got enough in the first half of the season to give themselves the leeway. And like I say, you know, it's some achievement to be where they are, to have had 8 points taken off them and still be outside the relegation zone. There's a lot of hard work that still needs to go. You know, that -2 does have a significant impact on the season. You know, it makes that win against Burnley even more important. But they've got to follow it up now, and they have some tough games ahead, very winnable games. But one thing that we have seen, probably that has characterised his tenure, is the winnable games, especially the winnable games at home, which are actually where Everton have the biggest problems.
Yeah. Yeah. But before that, we talk about winnable games at home, Gav. Club statistician Everton now go to the fixture where the longest run they've ever had, winless run in the Premier League. Obviously, they won at Chelsea in the FA Cup a few years ago. But, you know, if they go back to November 1994, Joe Royle's first away game for their last victory at Stamford Bridge in the league. What do you think chances are?
Sorry, optimism didn't last too long. But I'm going to keep the optimistic thread going here. You went to Chelsea last year in pretty similar circumstances, didn't we? Similar time of the year, was it? April, something like that.
Dallas Sims.
We had Dallas Sims, and we were up against it then. We were probably in a worse place then, maybe, than what we are now. And we dragged a 2-2 draw out of a game that actually I thought we did okay. And there's absolutely no reason at all against Chelsea, who had a 2-2 draw at copyright, the worst team that's ever played in the league, Sheffield United. That's not my copyright. That's what people say about them. You've got to give them respect,
Western,
obviously.
Derby County team? I don't know.
I doubt it. But you know what I'm saying there. You can see two at Sheffield United. They are a bit chaotic, aren't they? It's an eminently a game that we can get something out of, and I'm not just necessarily talking about a draw there either. But why not?
Yeah.
If Sheffield United can draw 2-2 with them, and Chelsea have had a few, continue to have a few results that surprise you, why not?
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see, I know we had a couple of injury niggles yesterday, it was interesting to see that we could have our midfield, fully resourced midfield on. And David makes for some interesting selection.
Yeah. Before we come to the formal predictions, then, just Joe, what do you thoughts? Do you think that what sort of game will it be down at Stamford Bridge?
I feel quite similar to when we went to Manchester United. And on the one hand, you saw a really disjointed, disorganised team that seemed to lack an identity and a plan. And they are the perfect opponent for someone like Sean Dyche, who, one thing he does have, and we saw this brutally on Saturday, he does have a plan, and he's normally pretty good at getting his teams to stick to it. So there's definitely an opportunity there for Everton. But there's also that frustrating thing, which, and we saw this unfold at Manchester, we know there's enough quality, and you just had that horrible feeling that it's just going to be, this is going to be the horrible 2-0 where Cole Palmer scores a penalty after 30 minutes and some other expensive signing that hasn't had the best of seasons removes the jeopardy in the 50th. But I with Gav, I think, you know, there's, you look at the long-term trends and you can say, oh, there's reason to be, you know, pessimistic going to Stamford Bridge. Well, you know, look, in the last few weeks, haven't have ended their winless streak. Dominic Calvert-Lewin has ended his gold drought.
I've always now a doubt.
So why should this not be the moment Everton also end their winless streak at Stamford Bridge? Yeah. I actually think Chelsea in recent years have actually been a relatively positive opponent. You had that wonderful win under Frank Lampard, which paved the way to the survival in that season, where you had the Richarlison goal, the amazing celebrations, the first coach welcome, Pickford's incredible saves. Yeah. You know, you had the trip down to Stamford Bridge last season, you had Ellis Sims' first goal for the, well, only senior goal for the club, but that was a wonderful moment. You come to this season, you had that brilliant performance in that run in December. Yeah. Lewis Dobbin got his first goal. I thought that was Jad Brantford's best performance in an Everton shirt, and then it was in front of Gareth Southgate. Yeah, I think, I think there's a big opportunity here, and there's a big opportunity against a mess of a side to really take the not necessarily take the pressure off, but to certainly reduce some of that pressure going into that big week of home fixtures. We know how difficult the home fixtures have home form has been this season. We know that there's going to be some tense times during those three games. Obviously, they include the derby and some big 6-pointers. Obviously, Forest is a very big game, but Chelsea isn't a free hit, but it's a place Everton can go down to play without any pressure. And I think if they take the game to Chelsea, if they start quickly, like we've seen this side do, so they could catch them out. And you know, it's a fragile side, that Chelsea. I know they came back against Manchester United recently with a late comeback, but really, you look at what happened against Sheffield United, and you look at what happened in that Manchester United game when they were 2-0 up and threw that away and looked destined to throw it away into the final stages. You know, this is a side that can be got at, and Everton can go a long way, I think, to, they can take a big step towards survival if they can take advantage of an opportunity that I think is there for them. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you're picking up on this in the background, listeners, but there's a bit of maintenance work being done here at Echo Tower, so I think we'll move swiftly swiftly on to the...
It's the Viking boards coming back, you, I think.
Yeah, they're coming back for me. It's the hordes across the park I should be more concerned about. But, Joe, predictions?
1-0 at Bridge.
Wow, yeah. A repeat of November 1994. That is bold from Joe. Gavin?
I'm going to go 1-0. Carry on the points. The year before at Chelsea, when Benitez, I remember, Brantford scored in the game, Dobbin made his debut. Had a really young team that night. I think Ellis Sims played really up against it. We got to track that 1-0 draw there then. So I'm expecting something similar, and that's why I'm going to say a 1-0 draw on Monday.
Yeah.
That would be a very good result.
Yeah, I will concur with Gav. Can't be quite as optimistic as Joe, perhaps being worn down by that history, but I will match Gav and I'll say 1-1. But I suppose that's all positive in a way. We've all gone for them to avoid defeat. I've been your host, Chris Beasley, been joined by Joe Thomas and Gavin Buckland. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.